Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I wonder how many of you got around to reading through these first pages of our study guide? A few. Okay. Well, that's good. And for those of you who didn't, well, anyway, we'll try our best. It's actually good. This study guide has, as far as the point that we were mentioning yesterday is concerned, of how Narada Muni arrives in some place and meets some particular devotee and then glorifies that devotee as the recipient of the greatest mercy of the Lord, and then the refutation given by that devotee, and then the proposal by that devotee who may actually be the greatest recipient. It is presented nicely in the study guide. Actually, there is more detail, and in fact, we will give more detail, but the basic ideas are there, and it's very, very good. So, yesterday, Narada Muni was on the Earth planet, and he met that one Brahmin devotee. Then he met the South Indian king, and they're both very impressive devotees, particularly the South Indian king is really quite outstanding. But the South Indian king very emphatically told Srila Narada Muni that it's not me. I am not the recipient of the Lord's greatest mercy. The demigods are. And even amongst the demigods, particularly Lord Indra is, and he gave various reasons. So Narada Muni became inspired, and of course he's a transcendental spaceman, so he can travel interplanetarily without any difficulty. So he just went flying off to Swargaloka, Indraloka, the top planet of the demigods. There are different levels of demigods. There are millions of demigods. The top demigod, though, is Indra. In fact, Indra means king. And that's a post. Our Indra, his name is Purandara, our current Indra, the current king of the demigods. His name is Purandara. So, of course, he's not as high as Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, or Lord Shiva. They have their places higher also. But other than them, pretty much other than them, at least amongst the demigods, amongst the controllers of the universe, Lord Indra, he is the highest, and his planet is the highest other than the planets of those three main deities, guna avatars. Amongst the demigods, Lord Indra's planet is the highest. So Narada Muni went flying off to Swargaloka, came flying in, and what did he see? Who did he see? He saw Lord Vamana surrounded by demigods, And particularly, Lord Indra was there, very prominent amongst those demigods, most prominent. So they were all worshipping the Lord Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods. He was glorifying the Lord. Aditi, who is the mother of Lord Vamana and Indra, she was pampering him as an affectionate mother will do to her very dear young son. And he was reciprocating by giving them different ornaments and presentations of his different paraphernalias and various other persons, the Siddhas, Gandharvas, Apsaras. Well, they're all demigods, actually, but they are quite lower, particularly the Apsaras and the Gandharvas. They're quite lower amongst the demigods, although they are demigods. So they were reciting prayers, singing, dancing. It was a very festive scene there on Swargaloka. Everyone was very excited. And Lord Vamana, speaking in a voice deliberately so everyone could hear what he was saying, he assured Indra in very protective, affectionate but protective mood, "Don't worry about the demons. I'll protect you. It's all right." Yes, "Don't worry about the demons." And Indra was reciprocating or responding by telling the Lord, "Yes, I know, I have faith that you will protect me from the demons, because you have done in the past." And he was reciting different experiences, different pastimes that took place previously when the demons attacked, but the Lord intervened and saved the situation. So this was the scene that Narada Muni saw when he came flying in to Swargaloka, the planet of Lord Indra. So Narada Muni came before Lord Indra and glorified him, that "You are the recipient of the Lord's greatest mercy because..." And we could just look at our study guide. We're in on page 4.2. Here, Narada Muni is explaining to Indra. It's a little bit simplified version. I'll give you a little bit more of the detail here. Narada Muni tells Lord Indra that "You are such a great leader that all the demigods like Surya, Chandra, and Yamaraj," these are particularly prominent demigods, the demigod in control of the sun. All life is dependent on the sun. The demigod in control of the moon. He is in charge of our minds. So that's also a very important role. And Yamaraj, extremely important role. He is supervising the movements of all the living entities. So these are the biggest demigods, really. So Narada Muni says, "You are such a great leader that all the demigods, including these biggest amongst the demigods, they all obey you. And not only that, but," second point, "even great sages like me," like himself, Narada says, "we are your citizens, we are your subjects, you are ruling us too." In a manner of speaking, of course, it's like that. when it comes to the really great sages, and particularly people like Narada. But on a certain level, it appears that the great sages and saintly persons, they are dependents of Lord Indra. He is really a very big person, actually. Then, third point, the Vedic scriptures, particularly the Rig Veda and some other literatures connected with it, but Narada Muni says, in a broad sense, the Vedic literatures praise you as Lord of the universe. You might know that particularly the Rig Veda and other of the four Vedas, some others, but particularly the Rig Veda, they really focus on Indra. Because, after all, as we have said, he is the chief of the demigods, other than Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So when it comes to Karmakandiya, he is the biggest authority in very immediate and direct terms. So the Rig Veda, or the four Vedas, 96% of which is the Karmakandiya section, they do focus on Lord Indra, really a lot, and particularly Rig Veda. So they praise him, the Vedas praise him as Lord of the universe, and he has the capacity to send people to heaven or to hell. You may recall yesterday the king said something like that, that he can curse and he can benedict, and not simply in like mechanical terms, that someone does a specific thing for which there's specific karmic reactions, and so the demigod can really do no more than give that specific karmic reaction. But Indra has some further degree of independence, and Narada Muni, like we mentioned yesterday, you know, he represents, first of all, he hears the one devotee explain why the next devotee is really so glorious and has received so much mercy. Then Narada Muni comes along and explains that to that next devotee. But as we'll see, he doesn't just repeat exactly, verbatim, but he kind of condenses, or, you know, there are some variations, although the themes are generally there. So he says that Indra, he tells Indra, you have this special power. You can send people to heaven or hell. So, and, you know, he's doing that with a lot of people. And, of course, very important point, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is your younger brother and treats you with the respect which is normally due an elder brother. In other words, the Supreme Lord takes you as being senior to him. So you really, you've got a lot of mercy. So Lord Indra responds by saying that actually I am not at all fortunate. Lord Indra tells Narada Muni, you're speaking like a Gandharva. Gandharva, the meaning of that is that Gandharvas are very clever and very tricky. They're expert actors. So, they're expert at manipulating people through falsely praising or ridiculing them or something like that. They can just play with people's minds, build them up, let them down, and so on and so forth. These are the Gandharvas. They're really very clever. So Indra tells Narada Muni that you're speaking to me like a Gandharva. In other words, you're making fun of me. I haven't received any of the Lord's mercy. In fact, he gives me a hard time. He puts me into so much difficulty that it is very hard to tolerate. So please don't joke with me and mock me. Don't do that. Then he gives a number of reasons. They are mentioned here in the third paragraph, or some of them, or quite a few of them even. Let us just go through them here as I've got them from my notes. Yeah, he says that me and my fellow demigods, we have been kicked out of the heavenly planets many times by the demons, and we've had to hide, or even sometimes we had to disguise ourselves in very embarrassing ways. Sometimes Indra has disguised himself as a sannyasi. Yes. So, Indra, poor Indra, who was very ecstatic there, worshipping Lord Vamana, he was crying, profuse downpour of tears from his 1,000 eyes. At times like that, he thinks that I'm very glad I have 1,000 eyes, because now I can properly express my feelings. But now he's just disturbed. He's disturbed that we get kicked out. We have to disguise ourselves. We have to hide. So what does this do, this statement? Well, one thing it does, if you can recall from yesterday, some of the things that the king said, it more or less refutes the statement by the king that the demigods, on the strength of their good fortune, they live in the realm of heaven like it's home. They just belong there. It's their natural place. It's their place. It is completely their place. It is not completely their place. They don't know when the next time will be that the demons will kick them out, and then they won't know what to do. And the king also said that the demigods can act and travel however they like. So they cannot just act and travel as they like. Sometimes they have to travel, they have to hit the road and just head for the hills and hide from the demons. So Indra refutes those claims made by the king. Then he gives an example, which is mentioned here on page 4 in the study guide, how Bali Maharaj once took over the heavenly planets and took over Indra's throne and everything, and took his share of all sacrifices, put his own friends in as the demigods. And this refutes the claim of Narada. Narada has made his first claim that Indra is the leader of the demigods who obey him. So the point is that sometimes the demigods are not in a position to obey him. They lose their control. So in that way, his position as leader of people who are not able to follow him, it becomes meaningless. So that happened when Bali Maharaj took over. Then the Lord appeared. There's some very nice points here. The Lord appeared, although not in his full form. Indra says he appeared as a mere partial incarnation. That's all. Just a very minor form of the Lord appeared. It was very embarrassing for Indra. This not so important form of the Lord appeared. Then he only appeared after some considerable delay. And during that time, Indra almost died of hunger and thirst, which refutes the idea that he's, and the demigods, always enjoying the nectar of immortality, which we heard yesterday. So he took his time. And then he appeared eventually, but in just a very, you know, relatively not very important form. And then in a deceptive way, he begged my kingdom back in a very dishonorable way. Indra's pride has been hurt here. That the Lord came, a minor form, he came late. And in a very deceptive way, he cheated Bali Maharaj, took back my kingdom, and gave it to me. He didn't even come like a real Kshatriya and fight. And he didn't kill him either. He let him live. So I don't know when he's going to come back, Bali Maharaj, and try again. So like this. Yeah. So, in this way, Indra feels that the Supreme Lord, he doesn't take me seriously. Then he says that us demigods, and him in particular, but all the demigods, that we are contaminated with faults like jealousy, rivalry. In this way, he defeats the king's idea. What was the king's idea in this regard? That the demigods are fixed in the mode of goodness. So Indra says, we're not fixed in the mode of goodness, and particularly me. That sometimes I commit serious sins, like I have killed Brahmins before, Vritrasura, Vishvarup, I murdered them. You know, I was reading through that this afternoon, and the verses, there's one verse that says that even though Indra killed Vishvarup, he could have avoided the reactions. So there, he is so powerful. He's so independent. He could have avoided the reactions or groups of persons. Anyway, he says here that we demigods, and me in particular, we're jealous. There's rivalry. Sometimes I've committed very serious sins. So the king had said, of course, that the demigods are not only sattvic, but they are free from sin. But Indra says, we're not free from sin. And we're always fearful of losing our posts. Therefore, they are not always effulgent. When a person is in anxiety, when they're really in anxiety, you can see. And any sort of blissful, you know, glow of jolliness and satisfaction, is not there. So Indra says that we're always frightened of losing our posts. Constantly obsessed by that. Prabhupada talks about this on a number of occasions. In the fourth canto, of course, Indra sent his son. No. Indra came himself and stole the horse from King Prithu when he was trying to do his 100th horse sacrifice. Then when Vishvamitra was doing his austerities, then Indra sent Menaka. So he's just really on the edge all the time. Is someone going to come and throw me out? So he says, we're hardly better than ordinary men. We're not really better than ordinary people. Then he says, as far as my personal relationship, personal interactions with my so-called younger, you know, respectful younger brother are concerned, Lord Vamana, don't you know how contemptuously he treats me? Didn't you hear how he stole the Parijata tree and the Sudharma assembly hall and took them down to the earth planet? And he defeated me in battle? So what sort of respectful treatment of an older brother is that? And he took, not only that, but he took the Parijata tree and the assembly hall down to the earth planet, which is the planet of human beings, and that means that we are not favored above the human beings. Because that was another thing that the king had said, that they're higher than the human beings. Their facilities and everything are much better than the human beings. Well, it's not true, he says. And the king had said that Lord Indra has this wonderful Nandana garden, but that Parijata tree was from the Nandana garden, and it was one of the best trees, or even the best tree, but he lost that. Then Lord Indra says that, haven't you heard about how my younger brother stopped the inhabitants of Vrindavan from doing their traditional worship of me? So he's not very respectful to me. And then there was the Kandava forest. It was very dear to Lord Indra. But one time when Agni had a stomach ache, then Lord Vishnu, or Krishna, got Arjuna to burn down the whole Kandava forest just to cure Agni's stomach ache. And on top of that, Arjuna is Indra's son. So he's undermining my relationship with my own son. So what sort of special relationship do I have with him? He just gives me a hard time, actually. There's no mercy involved at all. Then he says that when Vritrasura came and we were finished, completely finished, we appealed to the Supreme Lord to kill him. He wouldn't do it. He told me to do it. So I had to risk my life. And I only just killed him. Yeah. He only accepts my worship out of affection for my parents and Brihaspati. It's not because I'm particularly, you know, nice or qualified. And then as soon as it's finished, he disappears back to this other planet of his. Then he comes back and tells me when I complain that I want to worship you, but you're not here to accept my offerings. This is another point that the king made, that Lord Indra, that Lord Vamana accepts whatever Lord Indra offers very happily. But Indra says he's never here. And when he comes back and I tell him that I wanted to offer you something, but you weren't here, he says, don't worry, offer it to Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, because we're the same, really. And Indra says that, I know the philosophy. I know there are similarities, but I know they're not the same. So he's deceiving me. He's being dishonest. Then Lord Indra says, and on top of that, whenever I need him, I don't know where to find him. Sometimes he's in Vaikuntha, then he goes to Dhruvaloka, then he's in the milk ocean, now he's in Dwarka, but sometimes that's not even certain, because sometimes he goes to Mathura or Hastinapur. Sometimes he goes to Hastinapur to see the Pandavas. Sometimes he goes to Mathura. And when he goes to Mathura, we don't know if he's in the city or if he's going from one forest to another somewhere. So when we need him, in other words, that means when the demons attack, then we don't know where to turn. It's very difficult. Yeah. So, you know, one important principle here is that all the devotees that Narada Muni meets, that they all feel more or less the same way, sort of, or, you know, very similar. That, you know, we don't have any mercy. Not that we're just not the greatest recipients, but we've got no mercy. In fact, we're just having this terrible time, and it's really tough, and we're really unqualified, so what can we do? But there are others who are much, much more dear. So then Lord Indra says that actually your father, Lord Brahma, he has received the most mercy. Why? Anyway, page 4, number 4, gives the basic reasons, but there's a little bit more. First of all, as mentioned here, Brahma is the direct son of the Lord. He, in fact, is his only son. So that means they're really close. He's the direct son and the only son of the Lord. Then, he lives longer than Indra. Actually, he lives fantastically longer. There are 14 Indras in one day of Brahma. So, therefore, Lord Brahma, he really got a lot of mercy. He practically lives forever. He is the creator of the planets and of their rulers. Creator of the planets and of the rulers, all the demigods. He's the chief protector of the universe. When the demigods get into trouble, they often have to turn to Lord Brahma to appeal on their behalf. He is the ultimate dispenser of karmic reactions, sort of like it's his program. Indra is working more or less, and the demigods on his behalf. He is the destroyer even. What does that mean? It means that when he goes to sleep, then all the lower planets are all destroyed. So effectively, he is the destroyer. And finally, when the end of his life comes, everything is destroyed. So it's not so much, anyway, whether it's Lord Shiva or not is another thing, but it's certainly connected with him because his life ends, therefore everything is destroyed. And final point, and most important point, that on his planet, the Lord lives as the Mahapurusha. This is a form of, this is Garbhadakshay Vishnu really, or a form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. The lotus-naveled Mahapurusha. He lives there. And he accepts all the offerings that Lord Brahma makes. And as mentioned here in point 4 on page 4, he is non-different. He's an empowered incarnation. Yeah, as a guna avatar, shakchavesh avatar, he's an empowered incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So in other words, he's the Lord, practically. It's like that. So this is what Lord Indra tells Narada Muni. So Narada Muni is so inspired, he calls out, "Sadhu, sadhu! Well done, well said! You have spoken so nicely!" And quickly he went off to Brahmaloka. So as he was flying in, he heard the sounds of a great sacrifice being performed practically ceaselessly with great devotion. And he came in and there was the Mahapurusha, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, or a form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, along with Lakshmi Devi being worshipped by Lord Brahma. And he was taking all the items that were being offered and consuming them with his 1,000 mouths. What is that verse? Sahasra Shersha Purusha something? Yes, Purusha Sukta, right? This is that form of the Lord is being referred to. So after a while, after consuming in his 1,000 mouths all these different offerings with his 1,000 hands, then he and Lakshmi Devi retired to their private rooms, and the Lord wanted to have a rest and Lakshmi was going to massage his feet. So then Brahma told his sons to continue with the sacrifice, and Brahma, in ecstasy, crying tears profusely from his 8 eyes, saw Narada, who came glorifying him loudly. "You are the true recipient of the Lord's mercy." Why? Well, let's see here. On page 5. Some of the reasons are there. Let us go through the reasons. There's a few more. In fact, it's a whole thing here now about Lord Brahma. Why? Because he is, Narada says, "You are the master of the masters of all living entities. You're even the master of Indra." So you are the master of the masters of all living entities. You are the grandfather of all the worlds. It is you alone who create, maintain, and devour the 14 worlds. You rule the universe forever. His rule is not interrupted by devastations like Indra. You are self-born. Sometimes Lord Brahma is described like this. Try and note these points down because we are going to ask you them in our test. the Vedas, the Puranas, and the other scriptures, which all reveal the truth, and which reveal all the truth, they come from your mouths, and they are personally present in personified forms on the planet of Brahma. Yes, so he, talk about getting the mercy. He's really got the mercy, Lord Brahma. And only people who faultlessly perform their duties according to Varna Ashram for a minimum of 100 births can take birth on his planet. Now, in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva says, such people can become Lord Brahma. But Sanatana Goswami, in his purport here, he says that normally they only get to become his associates. It's very rare that one of them can actually become a Brahma. They'll normally just take birth on Brahmaloka. And they have to perform their duties for 100 lifetimes without any error. They're not allowed one error. And no fault in the form of things like pride, deceit, or any flaws of character. And there's no higher abode in the universe, or there's no higher abode. Even Lord Vishnu's Vaikuntha planet is within your universe. In other words, is sort of under you. Narada Muni is expressing himself like that. That the Mahapurusha is there, he's always accepting your offerings. And Narada says, I know you got his mercy because you personally told me in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second canto, how you struggled for a long time to realize him, but then he revealed himself to you. So I know you got his mercy. And you are an incarnation of the Lord. So for these reasons, Narada Muni tells Lord Brahma that you have got the greatest mercy. Lord Brahma covered his 8 ears with his however many hands and started shouting, Dasosmi, Dasosmi, again and again. I'm just a servant, I'm just a servant. He became angry, but he controlled himself. But still he reprimanded Narada. He said that I have constantly told you that I am not the Supreme Lord from your childhood. Don't you remember that time in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? I told you then very clearly. So I am not the Supreme Lord. Don't say this. Yes. Then he gives his reasons. Whole lot of reasons. He says, when it comes to this material world, it is not me. I'm not responsible. It's Maya Devi. She's responsible for the creation. And everything is going on because of her modes. It's not me. Rather, I am under her modes. I am under the mode of passion myself. And actually says to Narada, all of us are under her modes, meaning you also, Narada. And that's why you're speaking nonsense like this. Because you're influenced by her. And she is the one who the Lord sees. Yes. He notices her and he notices what she does. He doesn't notice Lord Brahma so much. So how can you say that I have even a trace of his mercy. This is what Lord Brahma says. I don't even have a trace. By Maya Devi's influence, I have just become conceited, and I think I'm the controller and grandfather and spiritual master of the universe. But it's just because I've become puffed up by her influence. So see how great she is. And then regarding being self-born, Lord Brahma says, I'm not self-born. I was born from a lotus flower. What sort of birth is that? And you think that because I'm managing the universe, you think that's a sign that I got the mercy? Don't you know how difficult it is to run this universe? It's a headache. So he has just given me a big burden. That's all. He hasn't given me any mercy in this way. But he's just causing me to suffer. And it's not that I'm ruling this universe forever. I'm going to die. I know I'm going to die. And I'm also in anxiety that I'm going to die. Actually, he says, I live in terror of the end of time. He says, you know, I get so fried. All I want is liberation. That's all. So I worship the Lord for that. And I also engage other people in worshiping the Lord on my behalf for that. And you say that the Lord is here with me personally, and that this is a sign of his great mercy. But I know the philosophy. He's everywhere. He's in every atom. So what is the big thing about him being here with me? It's not such a sign of his mercy. And final point, not final point, but in this vein, final point, he says, the Lord only accepts my offerings in order to uphold the Vedic principles, to set a good example. That's all. It's not because he wants to accept my offerings. It's not his special favor on me, on Lord Brahma. It's to uphold the principles, to set a good example so that everyone will do it, and also to honor the sacrifices themselves, because the sacrifices are very sacred. Then he says, he gets into a very interesting line of thought. He says that you say that the Lord accepts my offerings, but according to the philosophy, he only accepts things which are offered with devotion. And I have absolutely no devotion at all, and I will prove it to you. So then, Lord Brahma explains that I give wrong benedictions. Didn't you hear about the time I gave the benedictions to Hiranyakashipu? As a result, he committed such huge Vaishnava aparad against Prahlad. Well, I was responsible for that because I gave him the benedictions. Then after that, when the demigods and I approached Lord Nrisingadev, he wouldn't even look at us. In fact, we were afraid that if we approached him, he'd just kill us also. But he accepted Prahlad's prayers. So he doesn't accept what I offer. Then after that, Lord Nrisingadev angrily told me, he said, this is Srimad Bhagavatam 7:10:30. Lord Nrisingadev says, my dear Lord Brahma, O great Lord, born from the lotus flower, just as it's dangerous to feed milk to a snake, so it's dangerous to give benedictions to demons, who are by nature ferocious and jealous. I warn you not to give such benedictions to any demon again. But Lord Brahma says, still, shortly thereafter, I gave another demon some benedictions, and that was Ravana. And then he committed even worse Vaishnava aparad. He kidnapped Sita, the Lord's personal consort. So that was even worse. Then he says, that Indra, who was appointed by me, he just recently offended the Lord. Varuna, also appointed by me, recently offended Krishna by stealing his father Nanda Maharaj. Yamaraj, he kidnapped the sons of Krishna's teacher. He was also appointed by me. Kuvera was responsible for Shankarchuda. I created all the demons. And I created all the snakes like Kaliya. So what sort of offender am I? What sort of devotion do I have? And then he said, worst of all, just the other day, I stole the Lord's cowherd boys and calves myself. That was the worst. And it was just too much. And when I came to apologize and offer prayers, the Lord just looked the other way. He didn't say anything to me. I felt so scared. I finished my prayers and just left as quickly as I could. But then he says one other interesting little thing. He says, still, you know, I think I was fortunate because I went to Vrindavan and I saw the devotees there, and that was quite an amazing experience. Yeah. So this is a point which will come up later on in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. How, amongst all the non-residents, the non-bridge buses, two people are special. One is Lord Brahma, because he knows the glories of Vrindavan and the inhabitants. And the other is Uddhava, because he knows the glories of the gopis. So, he actually admits that he got a little bit of good fortune there. And he says, you know, I was afraid. I didn't know what he was going to do to me. I was afraid I was going to commit more offenses. So I just got out of there as soon as I could. So Lord Brahma says that, you know, there is a person who has got so much more mercy than me. He is actually the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. Who is that? Lord Shiva. Yes. So, why? So, Lord Brahma gives some reasons. He is famous as the dear friend of the Lord. Well, some of these reasons are here, or most of them are here in your book. Not all, but most. So he's known as the dear friend of the Lord. He is intoxicated with the taste of Krishna's lotus feet. Therefore, he has no interest in ruling the universe. In other words, he is renounced. He is detached, which Lord Brahma feels he is not himself. He's got no taste for sense gratification or anything like that. In fact, he is so advanced in his renunciation that he just laughs at materialists like me. He just mocks us. And he goes around naked with the ashes of dead bodies smeared on his body. And he's just ridiculing materialistic people like me by doing this. He is prideless. Part of this whole display is that he is prideless to the point that he actually tries to hide his glories by appearing like some madman with all these strange habits. He actually destroys the universe, not me, and therefore he kills me. He kills me. And Brahma says that he can give liberation. That liberation which I want, he and his wife, who is Maya Devi, they can give that. Everyone on his planet is liberated. He has made many people pure devotees. It is offensive to think he is different from the Lord. This is there. It's explained actually by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Madhurya Kadambini. The second offense. To think that the names of Lord Shiva, of the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, are independent of or equal to the holy names of Lord Vishnu. But, in a certain sense, Lord Shiva is equal to Lord Vishnu. In a certain sense, as yogurt is kind of equal to milk, in a certain sense, there's this element of non-difference. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point that when Lord Shiva is manifesting in that way, then it is an offense to think that he is different from the Supreme Lord. The Lord can tolerate offenses against himself, but not against Lord Shiva. In fact, the Lord intervenes to save Lord Shiva if there's some offense against him or if he's put into danger. He gives the example of Vrikasura. You know that story? Vrikasura, Lord Shiva gave him the benediction that whoever's head you touch, their head will split into pieces. And Vrikasura wanted to try it out on Lord Shiva. So Lord Krishna appeared and got that foolish demon to touch his own head, which cracked into pieces. So, the Lord cannot tolerate offenses against Lord Shiva, and in fact the Lord intervenes if Lord Shiva gets into difficulty. And if Lord Shiva gives the wrong benediction to someone, then the Supreme Lord does not get angry with him, but he forgives him very nicely, in a very affectionate way. So this is in the story of Vrikasura. Having killed Vrikasura, this is from the 88th chapter of the 10th canto, having killed Vrikasura, the Supreme Lord tells Lord Shiva, just see, O Mahadev, how this wicked man has been killed by his own sinful reactions. Indeed, what living being can hope for good fortune if he offends exalted saints? What to speak of offending the Lord and spiritual master of the universe, who in this case he is saying is Lord Shiva. The Supreme Lord is addressing Lord Shiva as the Lord and spiritual master of the universe, and saying that because this rascal Vrikasura offended you, he has come to this very dramatic end. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to this verse from the Bhagavatam, says, that this was a mild scolding from Lord Vishnu. Mild scolding. But actually the Lord was really highlighting the compassion of Lord Shiva, his exceptional compassion. So it wasn't like when Lord Nrsingadev chastised Lord Brahma and told him, do not give any more benedictions like that. So, Lord Shiva says that, Lord Brahma says, that Lord Shiva was worshipped by Lord Vishnu when he drank the poison from the that ocean of poison. Then the demigods came and the Supreme Lord himself came and worshipped Lord Shiva. And the Puranas sing of Lord Vishnu's mercy on him. So Narada Muni is so fired up, so excited. He wants to go immediately to Mount Kailash within the universe. But Lord Brahma stops him and tells him, no, don't go there. That is just a limited manifestation of Lord Shiva, who you'll find there on Kailash. You go to Shiva Loka. That is like a liberated planet beyond the universe. You go there to Shiva Loka, the original abode of Lord Shiva. It's beyond the coverings of the universe. And there you'll see Lord Shiva in his full splendor. So Narada Muni, totally in this mood of seeing Lord Shiva as not different from Lord Krishna, just so excited and ecstatic, Narada Muni went flying away, chanting, Shiva, Krishna, Shiva, Krishna, like this, off to Shiva Loka. So we'll take up the story in Shiva Loka tomorrow. Any comments or questions? Shinga Kavacha, bro. Yeah, our Lord Brahma is the living entity. Lord Brahma, the Jiva. And Hiranyagarbha is, he is described by Prabhupada as, it's either Prabhupada or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, as the prototype Lord Brahma. Yeah, the original form. The original form within the whole material creation, who expands into each universe. Hiranyagarbha. Yeah. So he is, he's like Shambhu, that very high form of Lord Shiva. You know, there's an element, a very strong element of his being not different from the Supreme Lord. He's not exactly the Supreme Lord, though. But he's up there somewhere in some special type of category, like Shambhu. Well, I haven't got that. Was there already? Yeah. It's not put like that directly in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Anyway, you know, is Vishnu Tattva like in the same way that Lord Shiva, Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, says there's an original form of Lord Shiva who has his own Vaikuntha planet and he's a Leela expansion. So, you know, he's very close up there like that. Someone else? Other? No, the strange ones, no. See, there are two Lord Shiva, two forms of Lord Shiva. Sorry, the question is that we have said that the followers of Lord Shiva are liberated, or Lord Brahma has said that. So does that include the hobgoblins, right, and all those ghosts and so on? who are the followers of Lord Shiva that we read about sometimes in the Bhagavatam. So the answer there is that, just as Lord Brahma has pointed out, that the Shiva within this universe is not on the same level as this original Lord Shiva who's in Shiva Loka, which is beyond the universe, beyond the coverings of the universe. So in that Shiva Loka, there's the complete manifestation of Lord Shiva, and all his associates are completely liberated. But the Lord Shiva within this universe, who is associated, at least there's like a group, it's not all, not that all his associates are all ghosts and hobgoblins, but there's a very extensive group, but they're not liberated. They are conditioned souls, but through his mercy, they're making progress to becoming elevated, becoming devotees or liberated or being benefited in some way. But they are not the liberated associates of Lord Shiva. That's another category altogether. Can I just understand the question? Are you asking whether the Lord Brahma who's speaking here is the prototype Lord Brahma? So the question is, the three sort of popular deities in the Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva who are referred to, are they the prototypes? Well, the Brahma and Shiva are not. They're the localized demigods within the universe. Yeah. The Lord Vishnu is also the Lord Vishnu within the universe. It's not Mahavishnu specifically. Yeah. Either Garbhadakshay or Shiradakshay Vishnu, depending on the context. Yeah. Can be either, depending on the context. And sometimes it's even interchangeable. Which is that we've been talking about two forms of Lord Shiva, but in the Bhagavatam there's mention of 11 forms of Rudra. So where do they fit into this whole sort of picture in terms of the personality of Shiva? First thing is, Lord Shiva is a very big and very complex person. He's not at all a simple person. He's far more complex than Lord Brahma, and he is far greater than Lord Brahma. So the 11 Rudras, generally those Rudras are described as being the particular forms of Lord Shiva who help with the destruction of the universe. In fact, when Lord Brahma became angry with the four Kumars in the Bhagavatam, then the 11 Rudras came out at that time, and they started to destroy the universe, but Lord Brahma told them, stop, it is not the right time yet. So he sent them, and they are now waiting. Yeah, but when the time comes, they will come out and take part in the destruction of the universe. I think it's there. I think you'll see. You'll find it there. Yeah. Yes, Dadu has made an interesting point that Lord Brahma, we don't have records of him giving bad benedictions since the time of Ravana. He didn't. When Ravana came again as Shishupal, Lord Brahma didn't give any benedictions. But then he asks that if Goloka Vrindavan can be part of this universe in a certain sense, then what is wrong with considering the Kailash of Lord Shiva within the universe as being on the same level as the Shiva Loka outside? Well, there's a greater sense of difference. Yeah. You know, Goloka is all-pervading and just, you know, completely beyond everything and totally supreme. And so is Krishna, the Lord of Goloka. Lord Shiva is not on that level. although he is on a high level. So, you know, he has that capacity to exist on different levels, in different spheres, and function in different ways to some degree. But, you know, it's not that sort of universal freedom that here, like, for example, here we're in Gokula. So it's not different from Goloka. It's not different. So, but the Kailash of Shiva within the universe and the original Shiva Loka beyond the coverings, there is a difference. Yeah. Kuvera, in fact, donated that abode, Kailash, to Lord Shiva within this universe. It is part of his, sort of on the edge of his kingdom. Sanatan Goswami makes that point in one of his purports there. And it is like a limited form of Lord Shiva who is present there. In fact, sometimes it is a Shaktyavesh form. It's a Jiva soul who's empowered to function as Lord Shiva, who's living on Kailash. And the associates he is with, they're not all the great liberated personalities. There's all sorts of, you know, these strange people, ghosts and Buddhas and so on, yeah. But in Shiva Loka, the original Shiva Loka, you don't find those people at all. No. So there is a difference like that. But, you know, still it is his abode and it is Lord Shiva. So there's a sense of similarity of, you know, like spanning across. His abode is kind of subdivided into different sections. Yeah. And he is present in those different sections in appropriate forms. And, you know, we've just made a distinction that the original Lord Shiva is something very special. The Lord Shiva in Kailash is not on the same level. But we can't forget that it is Lord Shiva. Yeah. We can't say that, you know, they're like two independent personalities. But still there's a degree of difference which exists and is real. And Shiva within this universe, he cannot just, you know, his situation is not just the same. Not totally. But there's a degree, otherwise they wouldn't be called Lord Shiva. Yes, that's true. Yes. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.